Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a sterling solo damn rendition of the House Money Sports Podcast. I am Wolfman Jay, and this, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to talk about a certain team from a certain city with a certain quarterback named Mitchell David Trubisky. I want to talk about the NFL for a little bit. I want to talk about the NBA. I want to talk about college basketball, and I'm going to wrap it all up into this episode right here. It's only me today. So, we're going to get the Sharkhead back after the first of the year, and we got the Balls Deep edition. We got the Balls Deep Major League Baseball off to a sterling start. In some respects, but that's an evolution. That's a work in progress. So we're gonna keep rocking away with that. We're gonna keep chipping away. We're gonna keep hammering away, and we'll see where it takes us. But for this episode, I just want to spend a little bit of time talking about the Chicago Bears. Now, they're my team from my city, and I love this team. First of all, this is absolutely unequivocally my favorite Chicago Bears team of all time. That includes, up until this point, my favorite teams were the Eric Kramer, Curtis Conway, Jeff Graham teams of the mid-90s. Those were, I mean, not even the Urlacher teams, you know, the Urlacher and the Super Bowl team with Grossman. I still like the 90s teams better than those teams. This team has finally, overtaken the mid-90s. Lewis Tillman, Curtis Conway, Eric Kramer, you know, Rashan Salaam teams from that era. So I love every single player. I don't think there's a player that I dislike on this Chicago Bears team. And I absolutely love Matt Nagy. That was an absolute home run hire. Like, in my fandom, in my life, I don't think that any of my favorite teams have made a better hire for their head coach than Matt Nagy. You could possibly make an argument for maybe Illinois when they hired Bill Self. The University of Illinois basketball team hired Bill Self, maybe. Possibly even Lon Kruger. But this was an absolute fucking home run. Matt Nagy is a stud. And I'm not just talking about, this looks like a real NFL offense. And I'm not talking about the yards or anything like that. It's just the way that the receivers get open. It's the play calling. He almost does too much sometimes, and it gets him into trouble with fake punts and shit like that, and gimmick plays on third down that he doesn't really need to do. But maybe there's a method to that madness as well. But it's just the way it looks. The way that receivers get open. The down and distance plays. And not only that, but it's just the way that the team plays together. You can tell that these guys like each other. They're a real team. There's discipline there. There's a discipline element. You know, there's a belief in themselves. There's a confidence level that comes from the top down. So Matt Nagy's an absolute stud. We have a competent NFL team. And, and Ryan Pace as well. Shout out to Ryan Pace. He did an excellent job in hiring that and making everything happen. John Fox was never his guy. His first real hire that he was able to hire on his own was Matt Nagy. That was a fucking home run. Ryan Pace, shout out to that dude. Good on you. But not only that, but let's talk about the way that this team turned around in such a short period of time. When you talk about, they missed on Kevin White, right? So that was a big miss. They needed a playmaker. They took a shot on a talented athlete, like an uber athlete. That didn't work out. But ever since then, you know, with Leonard Floyd and Trubisky looks like he's the guy. I love Trubisky. I hope that he's the dude. You see flashes with him. It's up and down. Like, I'm not going to be the dude that sits here and is like, Mitch Trubisky has arrived. He's a great quarterback. He's going to be amazing and this and that. I don't know what his ceiling or his floor is yet. Like, I still am undecided there. You can win with him, obviously, as we've seen. But this team goes from good to, like, generationally good if Mitch Trubisky does become a star quarterback. So, but they, you're getting Khalil Mack and Eddie Jackson and guys like that. Like, you know, up and down the roster, they just improved it. Every player on the team contributes. It's a great, it's a good team. you know, 1 to 53, there's a rhyme and a reason for everything that happens. So we have a competent organization to cheer for, and it's fucking awesome. Everybody's young, and it's exciting time to be a Bear fan right now. So, all right, that's number one. Number two, this season, how this season has gone for the North, or for the Chicago Bears. I almost said the Northsiders. The Cubs are on my mind as well. They need to do a lot of shit. But the Bears, the season has gone great, right? You knew from week one that they had a good team. Even the way that they lost in Green Bay, it was the old, you know, the old fucking hat where Aaron Rodgers just takes over the game. He still has our number, right? But you could see from that game that this team was vastly improved, and they were a pretty good. They were going to be able to win some games this year, and there was talent on the field. So, and then moving forward, you could just see them gaining confidence and getting confidence and getting better and getting better. And the biggest thing that I saw from this team is losing games that they should have won. They probably could have won every game that they played this year. They were in every game that they played. They never were out. Except for maybe the New England game, the way that felt, like you never really felt too comfortable about them actually winning that game in the second half. But they still had a chance to tie it at the end, remarkably. So, but you could see the team growing with confidence, and losing games that they should have won didn't really impede them for like two or three games at a time. Like it was like pretty much, you know, turn the page, good coaching. So right now you could see it growing. And even when they lost to the Giants, you felt like everything was going to be okay. Trubisky was coming back. He had a horrible game and they still won. You get the feeling that this team is one of those teams that they're good enough to find a way to win in a lot of different ways, even if one particular player isn't playing well or having a bad game, or if their quarterback's not having a bad game, the defense will pick it up. That's the good thing about having a good defense. And right now, for the first time that I can remember in my Bears fandom history, and this includes the Super Bowl era team, is I feel like this team can beat anybody in the National Football League anywhere right now. I feel like they can beat anybody. I'm not worried about playing anyone, anywhere. I can't say that for any other team that I've rooted for, any other Bears team that I've rooted for. Like, I really feel confident that this team can beat anybody. And I think right now, the thing that, if you look at it, the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Saints have all peaked. They've all played their best football, in my opinion. Maybe you can make an argument for the Saints, but they have come back a little bit. Like, they were scoring 50 points a game there for a while and just dominating everyone. And they're flirting with some losses here lately, right? And the Chiefs, you know, they lost Kareem Hunt. They've lost a few games. They got beat by the Chargers. They just lost to the Seahawks up there. You know, Patrick Mahomes is still putting up good numbers, but they're losing games. And they're just not – they were a well-oiled machine there for a while. They were playing with tons of momentum, and I think they're coming back down. And then same thing with the Rams. You know, they got off to an unbelievable start. They were doing whatever they wanted to, and they've lost some games here lately, including one to the Bears. So those are the three teams that I put in, like, the upper echelon. Maybe with the Patriots, you can, you know, whenever you have Belichick and Brady, you know, whatever. But they're not the same team. I think that the Patriots are as good as they have always been, obviously, considering their record and their yards and all that stuff. And Brady's not having that good of a season. Go look at the numbers if you don't believe me. So there is nobody that I think that the Bears can't beat right now. Like, if they lined it up tomorrow, even without Eddie Jackson, with a couple guys banged up, that are banged up right now, I still think that they could beat anyone, right? The biggest game, it's going to go through New Orleans in the Superdome to get to the Super Bowl. That would be the one game right there, the Bears in New Orleans in the NFC Championship game, that would slightly have me worried. I'm not scared about going to LA at all, but I still feel confident that the Bears would win that game. I feel like New Orleans is a completely different team at home. They're a lot better, but they're not invincible like they were earlier in the season. I think the Bears' defense, if they play well, and it's all up to Trubisky. If he goes down there and has an unbelievable game, they can win. You know, they played New Orleans last year, and in New Orleans, and Trubisky played in that game. That's the game that Zach Miller got hurt. And it was a game. You know, it didn't get ugly. I don't think. So, I think that's the one game that I feel like they could lose, but I'm confident that they could win. Other than that game, I feel like they are going to beat anybody else that they play anywhere. But I'm still confident that they win that game in New Orleans. Now, weird situation that they're in right now. They're the 3 seed, right? They're probably the second best team in the NFC, in my opinion, right now, power rankings-wise. I think they've jumped ahead of the Rams at this point with the way that Jared Goff is playing and the points that that defense has been given up, right? But, you know, as it stands right now, if the Rams beat the Cardinals, they're the number 2 seed. The Bears have guaranteed themselves a 3 seed in a home game. But the last game of the season, they have the division clinched. They go to Minnesota. Now, the last wild card spot is still up for grabs between the Vikings and the Eagles, right? The Bears play the Vikings. They're in such a weird situation because you have to believe that the Rams are going to beat the 49ers at home playing for the bye, right? But I don't, the 49ers are good. The Rams are playing like, aren't playing that well. The 49ers have nothing to lose. This is their bowl game. You know, anything is possible there. I'm not going to just conceive a victory to the Rams. You know, we saw the 49ers play pretty well against the Bears last week at times. You know, they're able to do some good things, and you could see some kind of skill players and shit like that. You got to believe that the Rams are going to win with all they have to play for, but, you know, maybe, you know, my guy, Southern Miss's own, I'll get back to you on that one, steps up and makes some big plays. Mullins steps up, makes some big plays, and San Francisco finds a way to win that game. But that's just one part or piece of the scenario. The other part is the fact that the Bears, they play the Vikings. They could knock the Vikings out with the win. It becomes the first thing that you have to figure out for the Bears is the between the rest and the rust. Do you just say, fuck it, we don't care, and we're going to rest our players to keep them healthy because we would rather have everybody healthy for the first wild card round of the playoffs versus taking a risk and getting a bye. So we're going to go ahead and rest everybody. We're going to give ourselves like a semi-bye, like a bye that's quote-unquote, you know, a self-given bye, and just rest people and then go into the wild card round and try to get it done there. But the thing, the problem with that is that even if you do that and you rest people and you say, okay, you know, we're going to play the wild card round because we don't feel like we're going to win, then you have to play the Vikings again because you're going to let them into the playoffs. Okay, so then it becomes, who would you rather play in the first round of the playoffs if that is indeed the situation? Would you rather play the Vikings or would you rather play the Eagles? If the Vikings lose and the Eagles win, then the Eagles are in. If you would rather play the Eagles, then you go ahead and you try to beat the Vikings and you knock them out. The other thing is you have more to play for with a win regardless if you don't want to play the Vikings for a third time this season, because you could knock the Vikings out and then you give yourself a chance at the real bye if the 49ers can beat the Rams. So it's such a weird position to be in. My thoughts are, I think they're going to rest some people and try to win the game. I think Trubisky's going to play. You can't afford to not play. You saw what happened when Trubisky sat out a couple games. The rust was real. Like, he shit the bed against the Vikings. That was a terrible game. I think you have to play him. He's in good rhythm right now. 25 or 29 against the 49ers. So he's in great rhythm. I wouldn't fuck with that. I would just go ahead and play him the whole game. And I think you rest guys like Allen Robinson, Eddie Jackson, and shit like that. So you try to win the game, and you rest the guys that you think might need some rest. So there's a little bit of both there. And then, you know, if you beat the Vikings, great. And if the Rams happen to lose, great. And then you get the bye, and the Eagles are in. But the thing about it is they play the Rams at the same time, so they won't have the benefit of knowing how that game is going. Maybe if the Rams game gets out of hand, you know, if you're looking at the scoreboard and the Ram game gets out of hand, then you, like, sit more and more people. But if the 49ers start winning that game, you know, I guess that could work both ways, too, because if the 49ers do start winning, then maybe you keep playing and you go all out to try to get that bye. And then there is, like, an integrity thing where, you know, you should try to play the game to win anyway. For the Eagles, you know, because you would want it to work if the situations were reversed, like, in the other way, or you would want the Eagles to go all out for you to get into the playoffs. So there's that little piece there, too. So there's a lot of factors that are going into this weekend's game. So I think they're going to try to win. I think they're going to sit people and try to win. And so we'll see. And the thing that I didn't talk about also is if the, let's say the Bears beat the Vikings and the Rams win and the Eagles lose, the Vikings are in. And that would mean the Bears would have to beat the Vikings three games in a row. That is probably my least favorite scenario out of this whole thing. That's my least favorite scenario out of this whole thing. So I don't want the Bears to have to play the Vikings at Soldier Field in round one, having already beat them twice, because it's hard to beat a team three times in one season. So, all right, now that that is established, I want to talk about, you know, certain players. What, how, like, from the beginning of the season, I think, first, I got to talk about my guy, Mitch David Trubisky. I feel good about him. I had a lot of question marks early. He had a good run of games there where he ran up some pretty good numbers. He got hurt. He came back. He shit the bed. I was really, really concerned about it. And he's rebounding pretty well. So I like the rhythm that he's on right now. He had his best completion percentage game of his career last week on the road. Good sign there. I think a lot of people made too much out of that game being close. The 49ers are better than the record. That was always going to be a tough game with the Bears clinching the division the week before, traveling across the country. And they just found a way to win. So good teams find a way to do that. But Mitch Trubisky had a great game. He made a lot of throws. I think he probably put the ball, his ball placement in the 49ers game is probably as good as I have seen it all year. So he's had some erratic games where he put up some good numbers, but he still made a lot of bad throws. And he didn't have a lot of yards against the 49ers, but I feel like he put the ball where it needed to be the vast majority of the time. So I felt good. I feel as good about Trubisky as I have all year. And so I feel good about that. I like where the running game is. Our guy Munch, Jordan Howard is coming on. He's and I like it because I felt like he was underutilized all year. But the you know, the good thing about that, you know, as far as Jordan Howard, like the good thing about it is the fact that he's fresh now. He's not as banged up as the workload wasn't there. And you could see that, you know, it doesn't seem like he has the explosiveness for whatever reason in this offense that he has before. He wasn't ever an explosive running back, but he was still a guy that could bust off big chunks of yards pretty regularly. And he hasn't been able to do that as consistently this year, but I think he's starting to, you know, become a bigger factor in the offense. And I like to see that. And Nagy's a guy that spreads the ball around too. So I think that, you know, you know, a plus about him not getting the workload, and maybe it was good or bad before, was the right thing or the wrong thing to do, is the fact that he is fresh and he's going to be a big factor going forward, right? I think that's a big weapon to have, a fresh Jordan Howard. Big guy. You know, the defenses are wore out. You know, there's a factor there where, you know, the defenses are wore out, they're tired, that shit starts to set in, and then you got this big ass horse power back that's just keeps coming at you, that's fresh. You know, that could be a big factor for the Bears. So I like that. I like that situation right there. I like that variable that the Bears are going to have from here on out going forward. So I don't know how much I play him on Sunday. You might as well keep his legs, you know, as fresh as they're going to be. You have to assume that you're going to be playing wild card weekend. You have to assume that the Rams are going to beat the 49ers. That's how I would go into that game. But maybe not. Maybe look at the scoreboard. But I've already said my thoughts on that. I think you got to try to win. I think you got to play a nice little mix of rest and win. So Jordan Howard's doing good. I like the Cohen piece. I think that he could just made plays all year. He's such a valuable weapon to have. Just that change of pace, dude. Especially with Jordan Howard, but like he could still get you a tough yard just by making people miss and stuff like that. And he's powerful enough to maybe move a guy forward a little bit. But then he's good out of the backfield. He makes catches. The big play factor that Cohen has is we've seen that all year. So that's going to be a big weapon for us. Allen Robinson has turned into a number one receiver, in my opinion. Like, he's the guy, coming back off a major knee injury. This is his first season. Kind of slow start, but he has become a go-to number one receiver, in my opinion. So we have that. Trey Burton is a number one tight end. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He does have some drops lately and like some questionable plays, what have you. But overall, I feel really good about Trey Burton, being the number two target maybe on this team in the passing game. I feel good about it. Taylor Gabriel is exactly what we want him to be. Anthony Miller, he's the wild card dude. Great receiver. I've watched a lot of his games in college. He was probably one of the best college receivers I've ever seen. He's got great hands. And he's the wild card, He can make plays. He's a playmaker. And he's probably your fourth or fifth option on offense in the passing game. So that's a great fifth option to have, is a guy like Anthony Miller who can make plays all over the field, can catch the ball, scores touchdowns. I like where the Bears are at. Their offensive line is a cohesive unit. Kyle Long's coming back. They're getting healthier as this thing goes along. They've stayed relatively healthy all year, knock on wood. But it's funny, too, because their two biggest injuries were to their two probably most important players, Trubisky, Khalil Mack. But Kyle Long is coming back. They're going to work him in a little bit. That's just going to – that gives you more depth on the offensive line. It's good to add a dude like that. Why not? He's coming back, and then, so the offensive line is going to be fine. It's going to be there. The only thing is, with the noise in New Orleans, you wonder how they're going to respond to that. That's going to be the biggest thing. The offensive line is going to be really important in that game. But, not to spend too much time talking about that. And then the defense is playing as good as it has all year. They haven't, the 49ers didn't score a touchdown in that game. The week before that, they... I can't remember the week, the game before that was the Packers game where they were able to clinch the division, a couple touchdowns late. The majority of the damage against this defense has been late in games. Like they wore out, and they didn't wear down against the Rams very much. They didn't wear down against the 49ers. So if they could put together 60 minutes of football on this defense, they're going to be tough to beat. They're probably the favorite to win just about every game that they're in if that defense can play for 60 minutes. You have Mack and Floyd coming off the edge with Hicks bull rushing the interior. That's an unbelievable, that's a problem. Just putting that type of pressure on the offensive line, on the quarterback, in the backfield, getting that type of rush, hurrying everything. And then you have playmakers, all over the secondary, or even the front seven, when you talk about those guys and you throw Roquan Smith in there and Danny Trevathan, and then you have Eddie Jackson when he's healthy. Kyle Fuller is making plays this year. I mean, he's picking the ball up. He's making tackles. He's a great tackler for a cornerback. Adrian Amos is a good tackler. At safety, that's probably his biggest strength, is being able to hit people and tackle. Eddie Jackson is a playmaker on defense. And depending on what his health is, they can win without him. But I like him, obviously, because he just has a knack for making the big play. You know what I mean? He gets beat a lot. He'll get beat taking chances, but he'll also come up with the big plays. And I think that kind of outweighs, the risk-reward with him is big. But there's been a lot of reward. He just has a knack for making the play and picking the ball off and getting big interceptions. So I like Eddie Jackson, My biggest concern on the defense is Prince Amukamara, but you know they go at him a lot, and he makes a lot of plays. He gives up chunk yards, you know, but he also makes a lot of plays. So if that's your biggest weakness on defense, I'm okay with that, right? I'm okay with that. But, you know, as long as they're collapsing the pocket and not giving the quarterback any time to throw, it makes everybody else better anyway. So I feel like that, as long as that continues with Eddie Goldman and Hicks and Mack and Floyd, Floyd's playing great lately. You know, he's got off to a really slow start, but he is coming on and he is such a factor. If he's good, he's got the Trubisky factor, right? If he's good, then this team goes to another level. If he's just mediocre, then they're great. If he's great, then they're amazing. So Leonard Floyd is a factor there. He's probably not the best player on the defense, but if he's great, he takes him to another level, if that makes any sense. So, I mean, if I had to grade this team, I was just going to say, it's just so much fun to watch. So I'm going to give it an A, just based on the fact that it's so much fun to watch. There's so much going on. It's the best offense that we've seen in our lifetimes, you know, as far as like competent play calling, you know, stuff happening, make a play when you need it, receivers coming open. There's been a couple lapses, you know, as far as like a few times where you kind of maybe think that there's a little bit too much going on and it doesn't work out, like the Wildcat fumble exchange with Cohen and Howard, and you know, maybe a few fake punts in there or some, you know, but I mean, you know, running the cross action on the quarterback sneak, like that, I love that shit, and that's the type of shit that we do. I feel like we finally have an offense that's like in the era. You know, we finally have an offense that matches the era that we're in, you know, and, you know, moving forward, I just feel like it's only going to get better too. That's the other thing. Like, this team is so young and so new as far as playing with it. I mean, imagine some continuity with this team, you know, for years, it's only going to get better. So I feel like this is just the beginning as well. So if I'm this confident already, That's a great sign. So I can't wait. I can't wait until this thing starts cooking. We're in great shape. We're in great shape. I will say that. And it's just so much fun right now. So all that being said, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk some other shit. I want to get into All right, let me talk about this Illinois basketball thing that's going on right now. I'm an Illinois basketball fan, Central Illinois / Illinois Valley born and raised. So, you know, we got the Bears that are going well, and just as well as the Bears are going, the Illini basketball team seem to be. The Illini revenue sports, Illinois football and Illinois basketball, seem to be doing just as poorly. So, Lovie Smith, it feels like, you know, that thing is slowly, like Titanic level, starting to turn around, you know, they got a couple recruits coming in this year, some top 100 guys, even though the recruiting class isn't highly ranked, you know, in the conference. I think it's like 30th in the nation. Plus they got a good couple local transfers that are coming in that should be they should be playmakers for them. They should be factors for them. So the Illinois football team looks like it's slowly starting the turn. There's still a lot left to be determined there. So, you know, I don't want to get too ahead of myself and say that this thing is on the right path yet. But some good things are happening there, right, that we can hang our hat on and say, okay, let's give it maybe you know, one more year and see where we're at the end of next year. So, Illinois basketball, though, the Fighting Illini, the basketball program, I'm not even going to, well, okay. So, I think that the basketball team is right on par with probably where they should be. there's a lot of unrealistic Illinois basketball fans right now, especially on the Twitter world, where they think that this team, for whatever reason, should be farther ahead than where they are. That we should have wins and we should be Kentucky and we should just, you know, a rebuild should take a year. A rebuild shouldn't even take a year. We should just be good automatically with the new coach. And there's unrealistic expectations of this team and this coach and this regime just seems a little bit unfair. So if I could break it down, when John Gross left the program, right, after the 2017 season, he was let go. He was leaving with the number three scorer in Illinois history. Malcolm Hill was graduating. And even though I was never a giant Malcolm Hill fan, he just played a lot throughout his career. And he was one of the few scoring options that they ever had. So he took a lot of shots. But they never won anything with that group. But at the same time, you know, he was leaving. And they were returning guys that were probably mid-major level talent for Brad Underwood's first, you know, season taking over for the Illinois basketball program. And a little background on him, he was a Stephen F. Austin back in like the mid-20-teens where, you know, those were, if you remember those teams, they were upsetting people in the NCAA tournament. He dominated there in the regular season. He lost like 5 games in his entire career in 3 years there. And they won tournament games. And then he got hired at Oklahoma State. He took a team that was pretty bad the year before with Juwan Evans coming back as a sophomore and got off to a slow start there-ish. But then he turned it around. They ended up making the NCAA tournament and losing by a point in the opening round to Michigan. Right. And then Evans went pro. And then Whitman goes ahead and he brings in Underwood to replace Gross ahead of the 2017-2018 season. So Brad Underwood, upon his arrival in Champaign, he adds Mark Smith and then a couple of, you know, just a late addition, you know, shot in the dark. You know, we'll take a flyer on these guys. Mark Smith was the Mr. Basketball. He was unsigned. He was getting recruited by Kentucky, I believe, at the time, and Michigan State and shit like that. So that was a big get for him. And he played the first, you know, Underwood's first team, minus Malcolm Hill. Remember, Malcolm Hill wasn't there. And the year before that Underwood took over, that team went to the NIT. They weren't any good. You know, they got to 20 wins with 3 NIT wins. They won 17 games in the regular season, or 18 games maybe. They had a chance to maybe qualify for the NCAA tournament, and they got blown out in warm-ups by a team that played in their warm-ups fresh off a plane crash in the Michigan team. So he had the roster, what was left over from that team, minus the best player on that team and one of the best scorers in school history, regardless of how you want to look at it. He was still the 3rd all-time leading scorer in the program. So he had Michael Finke. He had guys like LaRon Black, Tajon Lucas. He did have Trent Frazier coming in, and he lost on the guy, Tillman and Pickett. He lost those 2 recruits that were coming in the Gross regime, or the Gross, you know, staff. Those 2 guys went to Missouri, now we know, famously. And but Trent Frazier, Demonte Williams stuck around, and they added Mark Smith, right? So, and then they added Vessel and Ebo, who both have since transferred, same as Mark Smith. There was a lot of bumpy, you know, play last year, but the one thing that came out of it is that, you know, we found out that we had Trent Frazier. It was definitely a rebuilding year. It was absolutely everything that a rebuilding year should be. You should see what you have going forward. You know, somebody should emerge from that group as the guy that's going to take you, you know, where you want to go. And that happened with Trent Frazier. And you saw what players that you wanted to keep moving forward, which was basically nobody on the current roster. You know, you had, that's why you saw all the turnover after the offseason. They went like 14-18 overall in the season. They won 4 Big Ten games. It was ugly from a win-loss perspective. But you took steps forward because you found out that you had Trent Frazier. You knew that Mark Smith was never going to be good, you know, in that system. Or he was never going to be the player that he could be in that environment. He just didn't like it for whatever reason. Finke probably wasn't going to get you anywhere moving forward. Tajon Lucas wasn't going to get you anywhere moving forward. You know, LeRon back, leaving the program was probably best for everyone involved. You know, he was a good player, but he wasn't a guy that was probably good for your culture. And he wasn't, you know, as enough of a difference maker. I didn't feel, I mean, he was a good player, and he had a good year under his last year under Underwood, you know. So maybe you bring him back. He could have came back for one more year and see how good that he could have gotten ultimately. But I think he, you know, he was ready to turn pro and make some money. And I think it was just good to just, you know, for both parties to just part ways, you know, get everything that you can from the Gross era off the team. And I think that's what they did for the most part. They kept Kipper Nichols because he had already transferred a couple times, I believe, so he wasn't going to go anywhere. That wasn't even a transfer possibility. And Aaron Jordan wasn't going to go anywhere because he wanted to see it through, right? So you keep both of those guys, and then Trent Frazier. Those three players are basically the only – and Devontae Williams stayed as well. He's a legacy player. His dad was a superstar at Illinois, so he ends up staying, right? So – you have those four guys coming back. Ebo was the surprise for me at the end of the year that ended up transferring out of the program. I still don't know why that happened. Like, you hear why the other guys transferred, but Ebo, I still have no idea. So you bring back those four guys and you add a slew of new players and freshmen, right? And you're kind of basically back to square one, because the first year was the teardown of the rebuild. Like, you're at the salary dump stage where you have to get back to the starting block to even start moving forward. So they're starting basically at the beginning now in year two. And they played a tough schedule out of the gate. They got a lot of freshmen that are playing. They got a lot of freshmen that they have to work in and practice and shit. It's just not going to be that smooth right out of the gate. And they played way too tough of a schedule. And they're 4-8 this year, right? And everybody's shitting the bed. Oh my God, we suck. We're terrible. We're going to be bad forever. Underwood sucks. He can't win. And realistically, Underwood could have brought everybody back from last year's team. He could have brought everybody back from last year's team, kept some continuity, had a much easier, softer schedule, and be 8-2 right now, or 10-2. Maybe 9-3. You know, if he would have played, you know, teams like Evansville throughout the non-conference schedule, you know, and maybe thrown in like a couple of tough games. He could be 9-3 right now, but that would have set the program back even farther, because he's trying to build the foundation. Because he doesn't want short-term success. He's trying to build this thing for the long-term success, which is what people don't understand about this. And yes, it's not going to be smooth. It's not going to work like it would when Roy Williams takes over at North Carolina, when they struggle for 2 or 3 years, you know, and then Roy Williams comes in there and he's able to recruit there because North Carolina will recruit itself. That's not where we are. You know, Bill Self didn't bring in game-changing recruits until his, I believe, third recruiting class, when immediate game-changing recruits, immediate difference makers right away. He did have Head and Powell in his second class, but they didn't play a lot as freshmen. They weren't difference makers immediately. So, I mean, Bill Self didn't have real impact, immediate impact freshmen until his third class. You know what I mean? So, and everybody just needs to stay patient. This wasn't, I mean, it's a year and a quarter of a season into this rebuild from where it was. I mean, it was at the worst place that the program has ever been in. And I think it's actually a good thing that they played this tough schedule, because you get these freshmen acclimated to, you know, what it is right out of the gate. Everything now should be good. You're going into the Big Ten season and they've already played competition the caliber of what they're going to see in the Big Ten. So that's only going to be good for them. That's only going to make them better. Now, the complaint that I have, the one complaint that I do have, is the fact that the freshmen aren't playing as much as I would like to, especially with this being the rebuild year, where you want your freshmen to play and gain experience and this and that. And I think you see it a lot where, you know, if you have a big freshman class, you know, three of them will play and maybe two of them will kind of work their way into it. And I think right now I'm not as frustrated as a lot of people, because I think now is where we're going to see Samba and Griffin Alan Griffin play more from here. I think they were just getting acclimated, and they're coming along a little bit more slowly than Io and Georgie. So I think everybody, you know, frustration is normal, but I think everybody is freaking out, and I just don't understand what the expectations were. And the complaint that you could say, the legit complaint that anybody should have, the only one, is the fact that we aren't playing the freshmen as many minutes as maybe, you know, we feel like we should to get this thing, the process started quicker. And, you know, it's, you know, that's fair. So from here, you know, maybe from here, it's a fair assessment, you know, it's a fair expectation to see Samba Kane and Alan Griffin play bigger minutes from here moving forward. You know, the learning curve is over, the slow thing is over. They're gonna struggle, no doubt, but now it's time to take the training wheels off and let them go and see what we have there, because it's time to build for next year and beyond right now. Also, the recruiting, there's been a lot of talk about the recruiting and what's happening and what isn't happening. I love the fact that he is not bowing down to Chicago. That gives us a little bit of a backbone. You know, when we cater to Chicago, that doesn't seem to work. Like, you know, we might as well. We're the University of Illinois. We should be the ones. We should be the destination. We shouldn't be, you know, the second fiddle here. We should be like, hey, we would like to have you, and we're a destination place. So if you want to be here, great. If not, we're going to be okay. And I think that's what I think that is the attitude that Underwood has right now with the University of Illinois, and the way that the basketball program is going about it in Chicago. And I like that. I think it's about time that we had a backbone. Gross catered to Chicago, right? And he sucked up every chance he got. And I think Underwood is playing it right. I really do. I think he's going to be able to recruit Chicago once the wins start coming, if they do start coming, right? And we have a four-star big coming in next year, so it's not like absolutely nobody's on the radar, and we're in on a lot of other guys like Kofi Cockburn, who's a five-star big from the East Coast. We haven't had one of those in a while. Charlie Villanueva. So it's, there are some foundational pieces there, and there are some things that you can be excited about. And I think realistically, end of sophomore year Georgie, sophomore year Samba, you know, junior year Trent is when we should have some expectations to win games and be competitive. And then I think, you know, and maybe like have an outside chance at the NCAA tournament, like hold out hope. But then I think junior year, the following season is we should be expecting to win. And if the wins aren't coming by then we can, you know, go ahead and talk about coach being on the hot seat. But my God, like, everybody just needs to relax. Yes, some basketball rebuilds can get turned around quickly with one player. I understand that, but that is more of an outlier. Usually rebuilds of any kind in any sport are going to take a minute, especially considering if the program or the team that you take over is at an all-time low in the history of the franchise, program, or organization. So everybody needs to just relax. We need to get some difference-making wing players that can dribble drive to the basket. We need to get some athletes, and I think we're working on that. And so let's just stop freaking out, take the season for what it is, and hope for the best and enjoy watching the team. So until then, hang in there. I'll be back with some more things on that. Blood out. All right, so I'm going to clear one thing up about what I was talking about yesterday. I don't think I was able to make the point on the Balls Deep edition of the House Buddy Sports podcast that I really wanted to drive home. The point that I really wanted to make was the fact that I think Hayward, the Giants want to, I think the Reds freed up money for the Dodgers to pursue Bryce Harper and clear a path for him to go there. I think the Giants realize this, so now they want the next logical thing for them to do if they don't want to see Bryce Harper with the LA Dodgers is clear up money for another front runner to be able to pursue Bryce Harper and clear a path for him to go to that team, because the Giants and the Dodgers are arch rivals and they're in the same division, and the Giants don't want to see that happen, especially with the other players that they already have in place there and the success that the Dodgers have had. The Giants don't want to fall farther behind that organization than they already are. So I think that once the Reds made the move to take payroll from the Dodgers, I think the Dodgers are going to be more inclined to take payroll from the Cubs to clear a path for Harper to go to the Cubs if he would want to go there instead of going to the Dodgers. If his first choice is the Dodgers, it doesn't matter. So I think the Giants are probably going to do their due diligence and find out exactly where, you know, if the Cubs are a realistic possibility, which I believe that they are, and they're going to try to make that, they're going to try to do everything they can to keep him away from the Dodgers. That makes sense to me. That's what I'm holding on to, because I want to see Bryce Harper. I want to see what he turns into in Chicago playing for the Cubs on in Wrigley Field. I think that is as good of a fit player fan base that there could possibly be. Maybe outside of Khalil Mack and the Bears, or Trubisky and the Bears. I don't know. That is as good of a fit personality-wise and player-wise as organization-wise as I think that there could be. And I personally still believe that he is going to sign with the Cubs. When I have a feeling about these things, they always happen. Hayward, Darvish, to name a few. And so I think, I really do believe that this thing is going to happen. So take that for what it's worth. I am confident that Bryce Harper ends up with the Cubs. It's not my fucking money, right? They're going to have to pay the luxury tax, you know, penalty for at least the first two seasons, regardless of who they trade or what they do. They're going to be over, right? And they're probably going to have to pay quite a bit of luxury tax on that contract that they give Harper. But you know what? For 2 years, I'm pretty sure that they can afford it. I'm pretty sure that that organization is not going to be hurting for money. And then he's going to put asses in seats anyway. I'm pretty sure they've already done, you know, the risk reward, the money gain, so the money that they would have to give up. And they've pretty much probably already calculated that. They're going to do what they have to do to get him there, especially with an organization that seems like they're just treading water right now. And if anything, they're taking on a little water. They need that life spark that Bryce Harper would bring to them as well. It's just to the team, the city, and the fan base. And so I know the White Sox are there as well. And, you know, don't sleep on them. But they do have the money. They have the financial flexibility to sign both huge free agents. But I don't think that they're in a position to sell their rebuild right now, because who knows how long that's going to take. I think Bryce Harper wants to win. So that's a tough sell. Even though they should be good within the next 4 years, I still think Bryce Harper doesn't want to wait till, you know, he, and then who knows? I think there's just too much unknown with the Sox for Bryce Harper to feel comfortable signing there. I still think he ends up with the Chicago Cubs. So, and that's just a complete gut feeling. And every time I have this, I will say that the Cubs end up getting a guy. And if I could just touch on it for a second, Theo Epstein, great move. He's got some great moves, right? The Arrieta, the Strope deal for virtually giving up nothing there. But the Addison Russell trade, if Addison Russell doesn't work out, he did not win that trade, right? Maybe it was a push with the grand slams that Russell was able to hit in the playoffs 2016. But that wasn't as lopsided as it first appeared. So that one hurts his legacy a little bit if Addison Russell doesn't work out. But he, if we're going to go good signing, good move for bad move, I don't know where Theo, you know, comes out in the pros and cons there, and the good and bad. So I'm going to do a good and bad bucket. Hayward signing right now, that if anything, that's a push. That's a lot of money for a defensive specialist. That's a lot of money for a light-hitting defensive outfielder. Even though he, you know, is arguably the best outfielder in the game or in the top three or whatever, that's still a lot of money to give to somebody like that. If he was going to renegotiate that contract, knowing what we know now, he wouldn't get that much money. So, and now they're looking to unload that. The financial, where he has the Cubs financially is not good. I said that before. So I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I will clear up the Theo Epstein airing my grievances at another time. But right now, I am not happy with that, with the direction of the moves and what has happened. So with that, I'm going to get out of here. We're going to call that a show. I'll be back for some more. Stay right there. Stay tuned. Come back. We're going to do for the next Balls Deep episode, we are going to have me, myself, and Jay Pistol. We are going to do, we're going to pick the team that we think is the best team that never made it to the World Series. We're going to pick that team. We're going to look at the roster. We're going to make an argument. We're going to have a segment. Since it's the slow time of the year, we're going to have that segment. We're going to make the argument. What team is the best team to never make it to the World Series? And we're going to find out what team that is. So until then, stay there. Go Cubs, Bears, Illini. I'm out. Blah. Blah.